This is Fresh Air. A couple of times during the war, we called on James Adams to analyze the military strategies used by both sides. Adams is the defense correspondent and associate editor of the Sunday Times of London. We called him again today to look back at the military lessons of the war. I asked him if this was the first war that was decided by air power.
Yes, it is. And indeed, before this war began, there were many who said that air could not possibly do the job, that you had to go through hardened battles with ground forces to have any kind of victory. But the air does seem to have triumphed here, first time ever, and we will, I hope, draw a lot of lessons from that, that air power combined with modern technology and modern weapons can really have a stunning effect on ground forces.
Do you have any idea what happened to Iraq's air power? You know, at the beginning of the war, I think a lot of us thought, well, they've got some secret up their sleeve, they're stashing the plane somewhere, but nothing ever happened.
Yes, so it was a curious development, really. At the beginning, before the war broke out, there was a division in the intelligence community about what they'd do. One sort of faction said, well, what they're going to do is to fight, and as we come over, they will try over a period of weeks to husband their resources, but trickle them out against us. They'll lose quite a lot, but they'll take quite a lot of us with them. The other side said, well, what they'll do is husband their resources completely, keep them aircraft on the ground, and then after 2 or 3 weeks, they'll surge them out, fly as many as they can off the ground to attack us so that Saddam could say, look, I've suffered the under the Allied attack for this length of time, and still I can fight on. And he would then try and claw victory out of defeat. In fact, he didn't really neither of those things, in part because of our tactics. We were able to destroy large numbers of airfields and keep them out of action, so he was unable to get aircraft off the ground. And then he chose, because I believe even from once the war had begun, he still didn't understand that he was going to lose. So he chose to take his aircraft to Iran to hide, not to hide them, but to put them in a safe haven so that he would have an air force at the end. But, of course, whether he does or doesn't have an air force is largely irrelevant, because he'll have no army with which to go to war. So it was another mistake in a really very long list of mistakes that Saddam and his military advisors made.
What do you think are the most precedent-setting maneuvers of this war, the maneuvers that will really be written about in future books?
Well, what we wanted to achieve from the start was strategic deception, strategic surprise. And to do that, we had to have deception on a fairly major scale. Now, in the air phase, we achieved surprise. Well, there is, as they say, no great surprise about that. But in the ground phase, what happened in the few days preceding battle being joined was really a stunning series of major battlefield maneuvers where, in the west, 7th Corps and the British 1st Division moved 200 to 300 miles west of where they had been last seen by the media and the Iraqis. And in the east, the Marines, the U.S. Marines, 1st and 2nd Divisions, moved west in a very rapid 2 or 3 day maneuver to completely change their positions. And at the same time, the sort of reconnaissance operations and signals and everything else that the Iraqis had been picked up continued to happen to pretend that we were where they still thought we were. So when we actually attacked, we came from places that they just didn't believe we were. Now that, in terms of dictating the course of the ground battle, was very important and was an almost unimaginable feat of logistics to be able to achieve that. And then to be able to employ the very rapid maneuver warfare that we are trained to do and do it so effectively was, I think, a real example of how classically to employ very large numbers of forces in a ground environment. And I think if in staff colleges to come, that particular phase of the operation will be studied as a classic of its type.
General Schwarzkopf talked about how deception was one of the most important techniques the military used, and they used deception to offset the Iraqi numerical edge in the ground war. And Schwarzkopf talked about how he wanted the Iraqi army to believe that we were going to conduct a massive amphibious operation and that's what was written about a lot in the press. Do you think that the press was used unwittingly as part of the deception campaign?
Oh, no question whatsoever. in exactly the same way as Saddam was gathering much of his intelligence from CNN. So the U.S. military and the Allied commanders understood very well that the media had a role to play in this. Now, they didn't lie to the media and say, we are going to do this. They said, we are practicing an amphibious landing. If you want to come and photograph it, please do. And then they took the media up to the border where the Marines were, and the Marines said, we're doing this, that, and the other. And the media concluded that clearly there was going to be a major thrust north from where these guys were. Now, the media drew the wrong conclusions, albeit they were being led along to draw those conclusions. But that played a very valuable part in deceiving the Iraqis as to what was going to happen. And I cannot criticize the commanders for doing that, because it clearly saved thousands and thousands of Allied soldiers and airmen's lives.
Let me ask you how you felt when you heard that the fighting was over.
Gosh, journalists aren't supposed to have these personal feelings. I thought it was absolutely stunning, actually. I've lived and written with lived with this story and written about nothing else for the last 6 months, and I have never been so closely involved with a story for so long. And I was writing last weekend about very late into the night when the tanks first started going over the border, and it was with both excitement and trepidation, and also a great deal of sadness that this had actually come to pass, because once again Saddam Hussein had simply not understood what was about to be unleashed. And if we had 10,000 casualties on our side, what was certain is that he would have 60,000 or 100,000 on his side. And these poor, ignorant guys sitting out there in the desert being condemned to this dreadful fate was outrageous. So in the end, of course, when victory was achieved, and achieved so fast and with such and so few casualties on our side as to be almost beyond belief, I was pretty overwhelmed, I must say. And watching President Bush on the television last night, it was a moment in history, and I felt proud to be married to an American.
James Adams, thank you very much.
Thank you.
James Adams is defense correspondent for the Sunday Times of London. This is Fresh Air.